Community Matters. Solutions to local issues and leaders who are making a positive difference.
Hey, it's Megan from The Morning Show, and you're encouraging WPER. Welcome to another edition of Community Matters. This morning, we have a few interviews lined up for you. So our first one is going to be about quitting smoking, focusing on a public health situation here. We're going to be speaking with Dr. Karen Hacker. She is the director of CDC's National Center for Chronic Disease Prevention and Health Promotion, and also Jerry Madison, who is a campaign participant of the CDC's TIPS campaign. So we're going to learn more about the TIPS campaign. Welcome both to the show. Thank you so much for your time today. Dr. Hacker, if I could just start with you. For someone who's never heard of it before, can you explain what the TIPS campaign is?
The TIPS campaign, we're now in our 10th year. It's really a campaign to build awareness about the harms of smoking and the challenges that people face. It can encourage people who are smokers to quit smoking. And as you probably know, it's been very, very effective. We're adding some new voices, and we really, really appreciate the brave men and women who have shared their stories about the impact that smoking has had on their lives.
Beautiful. And Dr. Hacker, if I could ask, how long has the TIPS campaign been in effect, and what is, I guess, the overall goal for the TIPS campaign?
This is our 10th year, and we have seen over a million people quit as a result of the TIPS campaign, and millions more who have tried to quit. And as my colleague over here, Jerry, has said, don't quit quitting, which I think is a really important message. The TIPS campaign has been, I think, very effective because it really lets you into the experiences that individuals have had as a result of smoke.
Perfect. And Jerry, I understand that you were a campaign participant. Could I ask you then, from your perspective, how effective has the TIPS campaign been, even in your own experience?
It's been very effective. I've had some of my good friends quit smoking because of the campaign. And it helps a lot of people and gives a perspective from a personal point of view, as opposed to just somebody glaring at you, telling you to quit smoking.
Awesome. That sounds great. Dr. Hacker, I'd love to ask, we see, you know, quit smoking campaigns everywhere. I feel like they're all over the place. But what makes this particular program different?
I think it's really the sharing of these individual stories, giving voice to the 16 million people who've experienced problems as a result of smoking and to their families. And I think sharing those stories that really touch your heart makes the difference. And we do want to encourage anyone who is smoking to call 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
Perfect. Thank you. And Jerry, back to you for just a second. What made you decide to quit smoking? What was like that sort of that moment for you that were like, all right, I'm ready to make this decision?
Well, like I told them before, it was just the look in my daughter's eyes when I had my first exacerbation from COPD and I couldn't breathe. And I couldn't bear to see that look anymore.
How has your life changed since you made that switch, since you quit?
Well, I've had to quit my job. I was a Medicare for 20 years. I had to quit my job. I can no longer do the things I used to love to do, which is gardening and hanging out with my girlfriend. Instead of a cute purse, I have to carry a oxygen machine wherever I go.
Amazing. Dr. Hacker, I know that you've not only been exposed to Jerry's story, but so many other stories. Have you seen similar stories sort of from other campaign participants? Is this a pretty very effective campaign?
Absolutely. I think that the stories that are being shared about people's experiences, about the impact that smoking has had on individuals' lives, but also on the caretakers of those individuals. People who, like Jerry, have to go everywhere with an oxygen tank. People who've had surgery so that they've had their larynx removed so that they have to talk through a little speaker box. There are so many stories. Stories is the one that you've, there may be ones that you have already seen about individuals who've had cancer and loss within their lives. These are the stories that are real stories and hopefully will encourage others to take action and quit now.
There is a term that I came across in just reading in advance of this interview, which was called quit lines. Can I ask you to explain what a quit line is?
Sure. A quit line, which is what you'll learn about if you dial that 1-800-QUIT-NOW line, is a line where you'll get free and confidential support. Individuals will help you understand what's available to you, what resources can be accessed in your community. It's in multiple different languages, and it's free.
Free is a good thing. That's fantastic. So I'd imagine just having the support in general, that's got to make a huge difference in someone who's making the attempt to quit smoking.
Absolutely. These quit lines have been very, very effective.
Awesome. All right. Thank you. And Jerry, just speaking from someone then who's already been through this process and very successfully has quit smoking, what tips would you offer to someone who's going through the same thing?
Well, like Dr. Hacker said, don't quit quitting. And if you start back for whatever reason, don't beat yourself up too bad. Just start all over and quit again. You'll eventually, you'll quit.
Fantastic. Dr. Hacker, any tips that you would add to that?
No, I just think what Jerry's saying is right on course, and that you really want people to try. It may take you more than one attempt, but it is definitely worth it in the end. And the resources are there, as I said, that 1-800-QUIT-NOW line. You can also go to the cdc.gov/tips to find out more about the campaign and more about other resources.
Dr. Hacker, I'd love to ask you just about the role of the community and family members in helping others quit. Is there something that we can do to help those who are trying to quit to help them in their success?
Well, number one, you cannot smoke yourself. That would be really helpful, and quit yourself, because I think that does come into play. People who smoke around other smokers, as you know. Also, I think encouraging folks that, you know, keep going and try. I think it is the voices of the loved ones who often are the stimulus for individuals to quit smoking.
And Jerry, you mentioned your daughter being the impetus, the thing that got you to actually decide to quit smoking. What did her role play in your quitting? How did she impact your success, but also any other family or other support from your community?
Well, she's my biggest support group. She's here with me, make sure that I have what I need and take my medicine. And like I said, I had a couple of girlfriends that quit because of it. Just be positive and try not to be so negative when people start back smoking. Just encourage them to quit.
Perfect. And Dr. Hacker, anything else about the TIPS campaign that you did not get to talk about that you'd like to?
No, I think we covered most of it. It's coming out. We've got some new individuals who are sharing their stories. We're in our 10th year. It's effective. And again, to those who are smokers, please consider quitting now. There's so many resources available to you. 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
And that concludes our interview with Dr. Karen Hacker, Director of CDC's National Center for Chronic Disease Prevention and Health Promotion. We're now, for our next interview, going to be staying within the public health sector, but transitioning to speak with Dr. Perry Godsey about human papillomavirus and the link to certain cancers and diseases, as well as things that you can be on the lookout for. So here's that interview with her. Good morning, Dr. Godsey. How are you today?
Hi, Megan. How are you? Good morning.
I understand that HPV Awareness Day, March 4th, I mean, we're right there in the thick of it. Can you tell me a little bit about what is your goal for Awareness Day 2021?
So thank you for having me. I'm Dr. Perry Godsey, and I'm partnering with Merck for International HPV Awareness Day to help educate viewers, listeners, regarding human papillomavirus, otherwise known as HPV. So HPV is a transmitted infection, and it's a very common transmitted infection. About 85% of people will acquire HPV at some point in their lifetime. It's very important for people to understand that the majority of people that are infected with HPV will clear the virus without any problem, but some people will go on to develop an HPV-related cancer. We don't know why some people clear the virus and some people go on to develop an HPV-related cancer.
So can I ask you then, you said it is very common. Who is at risk for catching this? Is it more prevalent in a specific group of people or age group?
No, so no matter your gender or your age, anyone can be at risk for HPV infection. And it's important to know that HPV infections often do not show any signs or symptoms. Mm. So anyone who has the virus can pass it on without even knowing it.
So knowing that there are no symptoms, that's definitely something that we would need to be aware of. Is there anything else that we need to know about HPV?
Yeah, so I want people to understand about the link between HPV and HPV-related cancers. So as mentioned, you know, the majority of people clear the virus, so I don't want people to be, you know, scared. That's not my point here today. My point is just to bring awareness, because some people that do not clear the virus will go on to develop an HPV-related cancer. There are about 35,000 people in the United States that are diagnosed a year with an HPV-related cancer.
So what types of cancer can, I mean, you keep saying HPV-related cancer. What cancers are we talking about?
So there's a myriad of different cancers, and people can learn more about HPV and HPV-related cancers by talking to their healthcare provider.
Mm-hmm.
The one that I am most familiar with and the one that I am most comfortable speaking about is cervical cancer, as I am an obstetrician gynecologist. And there's about 12,000 cases of cervical cancer a year that are related to HPV in the United States.
So without any symptoms then necessarily being present, I would imagine the only way then to find out if this is something that you have is to talk to your doctor, right? Screenings and things like that?
Yes, you're exactly right. So first and foremost, you want to talk to your doctor regarding HPV, HPV-related cancers, and screening. Unfortunately, there's no routine screening right now for men, but that is why I encourage everybody to talk to their doctor about HPV and the screening that's right for them.
And I do just want to sort of underline this fact, because you've mentioned, you know, cervical cancer being the one that you're most comfortable talking about because of your experience, your education, your specialty. But this is not something that just affects women. You did say that this both genders, that this is something that both genders can be exposed to, right?
It is. Yes, it is. So both men and women can be both carriers, and both men and women can acquire HPV related cancer.
And I know you touched on this a little bit, but just as far as how common HPV is, you said 85%, is that right?
Yes, that is correct. According to the CDC, 85% of people will be infected at some point with HPV. So again, that seems like a huge number, but we have to remember that the majority of people that obtain HPV will clear the virus without any problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the fact that some people will go on to develop HPV-related cancers, and we don't know why that is. Why do some people clear it so easily, and why do some people go on to develop HPV-related cancer? Now, there is, you know, some risk factors that we know. For instance, smoking. Smoking will increase your risk of cervical HPV-related cancer, but that doesn't mean that everybody that gets an HPV-related cervical cancer smokes, you know? So although there are certain risk factors that we can identify, for the most part, we don't know. Why do some people clear it, and why do some people go on to develop HPV-related cancer? And that's why it's so important to just understand what HPV is and what its link to HPV-related cancers is.
So let's say that someone has gone through the screening, they find out that they do have HPV. What treatments are they looking at? What sort of options do they have from there?
So right now, there's no treatment for HPV infection.
Mm-hmm.
That's important to understand. Now, of course, there are certain, you know, treatments for certain types of cancer, but again, that's very complicated. It would depend on the type of cancer, what is appropriate for you, what stage you're at. You know, that's something that is much more complicated and would have to be dealt with your provider if you were to acquire an HPV-related cancer.
So if you do then, if you do test that you have HPV, and there is no treatment for that, what then is the next, I guess for someone who receives that diagnosis, what is the next thing that they're looking at? Are they just looking at a consistent screening and conversation with their doctor to look out for HPV-related cancers? Or is it just like a waiting game at that point?
So it's not necessarily a waiting game, mm-hmm. because you have to remember, for the most part, it's not going to cause anybody any problems.
Sure.
So, you know, depending on, you know, the particular situation. So let's look at, you know, cervical, for instance. Mm-hmm. If you were to be identified that you do have HPV, well, then you're on your cervix, then your doctor would set up a program that's appropriate for you. How
okay.
often do we want to look at that? How often do we want to screen for abnormal cells? So there is a process, for instance. But again, it's important to know, you know, oh my gosh, I don't want people to think, oh my gosh, I have HPV, I definitely have cancer. That is not the case.
Okay, good.
For the most part, people will clear the virus.
Perfect. Thank you. And for those who want to find out more, where can they go to get more information about this?
So again, first and foremost, I want people to talk to their doctor mm-hmm. regarding HPV and HPV-related cancers. And in addition, I encourage people to go to HPVcancerstories.com. There is a lot more information regarding HPV and its link to HPV-related cancers, and they can also hear some personal stories there.
And is there, just one final question for you, is there any conversations that, like, even families can be having within the family unit in terms of, like, you know, parents educating their children about this? How can we raise awareness for HPV at that level?
Well, I think you've identified it. It's having the conversation, right? That is where the awareness starts. You know, a lot of times there's a stigma surrounding HPV, and it's something that's not discussed. And I really want people to take ownership of their health and their education and just start having those conversations. That is step one.
Great. Good conversation with Dr. Perry Godsey, again, about HPV. Thank you for all that fantastic information. For our final interview this morning, we're going to be shifting gears a little bit to more financial, speaking with Margie Mannix, Digital Editor-in-Chief for AARP. And this interview will be about tips and advice for older Americans struggling with filing their taxes this year. So without further delay, here's our final interview, this one with Margie Mannix. Good morning, Margie. Welcome to Community Matters. How are you today?
I'm great. Good to be here.
Awesome. Thank you for taking the time to talk with me today. I know that tax season is never a super comfortable thing to go through, but especially with a year like this. So I'm grateful for an opportunity to ask you some questions.
Yeah, we want to get the word out to older Americans about all the things they need to be aware of.
So what would you say then, just from your expertise in this matter, the research that you've done, everything, what is one of the main things that taxpayers in general, but specifically our older population, need to be keeping an eye on this year?
Well, the first thing is this is the most complicated, without a doubt, the most complicated tax season ever. There's so many things that are going to be affecting your tax return from stimulus payments, which, by the way, are not taxable. And then unemployment benefits, which you may be facing for the first time as an older American, they, though, are taxable. And many older Americans are shocked by that because they've never collected unemployment benefits before. Mm.
What would you say are some of the common questions that taxpayers are asking this particular season?
Well, a couple of them are perennial, like, for example, can I file for free? And yes, there's a number of programs out there where if you have an adjusted gross income of less than $72,000, a number of places where you can go and get free tax help. Of course, many people, millions of Americans every year have taken advantage of the AARP Foundation Tax Aid Program. We still have that this year. This year, the one twist, though, because of COVID, because of local restrictions, and because of volunteer availability, we are requiring appointments for our tax aid programs. But we have a number of options for people, you know, virtual, contact-free, as well as coaching you through do-it-yourself. So we have a number of ways that people can do that. There's also the IRS free tax file. A number of programs, number of organizations offer help, particularly to low-income Americans. So that's a great thing this year. Another big question we're getting, touching on a little bit before, is my economic stimulus payment taxable? No. Short answer, no. However, some people are really worried because they didn't get their first round or they didn't get their second round. Well, guess what? Your tax form, this is where you claim it. If you missed it, we do know that in the Washington, D.C. area, probably, I think more than, the IRS reported more than 7 million people got stimulus payments. But we do know that across the nation, about 10% of people are missing a stimulus payment. Now, that could be for many reasons. Maybe your income's not high enough to file a tax return, or maybe it went to a closed a bank account or an inactive account. And of course, a lot of people had a drop in income because they lost their job or their job, you know, changed in some way. So, and that means that maybe you qualified for the first or the second or vice versa. So it's very, very confusing. But the good news is you can claim that missing stimulus payment or amount on your tax return. It's, you know, it's called the recovery rebate credit. There's a worksheet in the 1040 form, and there's a special form for seniors, which was rolled out last year, and it's particularly helpful to older Americans who file their tax return by hand, and some people still do that. So it's easier for them to read. It has a bigger font, you know, for the text size and everything. But that form, it's the 1040 SR and the 1040, both have this worksheet for the recovery rebate credit. So I would urge everyone to make sure they look at that, fill it out, because it will guide them through if they are missing a stimulus payment. And the reason they really need to think about this, if they are missing a payment, is this credit can not only reduce your taxes, but it may, depending upon your financial circumstances, produce a refund.
Perfect. Thank you. You said something sort of in the beginning of your response that I'd love to go back to, because I've never heard of this before. And so I'm curious how many people like also have not heard of it, but it's tax aid, and that's a program specifically for senior citizens through the AARP. Could you tell me a little bit about what that is?
Yes, it's a program that's been around for many years. It's we are probably the biggest helpers for tax help in the nation, and it's called the AARP Foundation Tax Aid Program. And our website has a locator so you can find it in your area.
in your area. And it's a wonderful, wonderful program. But again, I said it's limited availability this year because of some COVID restrictions and volunteers. So we are asking for appointments. But even without an appointment, we have many options. Like I said, we have, you know, virtual help, contact-free help, low-contact help. So it's a great thing. And if you go to www.aarp.org/taxes, we have put our tax aid locator on there. And it's all, if you can't get an appointment in your area with tax aid, we also guide you to the IRS's tax help service and many other organizations that offer free tax help.
Perfect. Thank you. What are some tax frauds and scams that people should be on the lookout for, especially this year?
Well, this year, one of the ones that's coming back, as it does every year, but it also ratchets up during tax time, is, and my mother was just a victim of, not a victim, but she just got this call recently. You get a call on your answer machine, or you can hear it as you're sitting there. It's the IRS. Somebody says they are the IRS. And that you owe back taxes, and if you don't pay them, we're going to come and arrest you or haul you off to jail. That's what basically my mother heard. I assured her, Mom, no. First of all, you don't owe back taxes. And if you did owe back taxes, the IRS would never call and threaten you. They would send you a letter. So that's a big one that always, you know, ramps up during tax season. The big twist this year is we are hearing from older Americans who, out of the blue, get the form 1099-G, which talks about how much you've collected in unemployment benefits. We have discovered that these fraudsters are filing for unemployment benefits in other people's names. This is identity theft, pure and simple, and it's starting to make the rounds now. But that is there. You know, these scamsters are always a step ahead of us. But we want people to be aware of these, because the more you're aware of these scams, the more you can spot them and detect them. And I would urge everyone not to pick up that phone if they don't know who the caller is, and to never, ever give out financial information over the phone.
Now, let's say that someone is concerned about whether or not something is a scam. Who could they contact to find out, just to see if something is legitimate?
Well, we have another program called the AARP Fraud Watch Network. And this is, we have trained counselors Monday through Friday that can talk you through what you think might be a scam, can give you tips, and it can also send you to resources to help you if you have been a victim of a scam. And you can reach that at aarp.org/fraudwatchnetwork. And I can also give the 800 number, which is 877-908-3360. I'll repeat that. It's very important. 877-908-3360. Again, it's the AARP Fraud Watch Network.
Perfect. And then just for information from AARP in general, even outside of Fraud Watch and anything, where can people go for more information?
Yeah, great question. We have gathered it all in one place on our website. It's www.aarp.org/taxes. We've got everything you need to know about getting that missing stimulus payments, how unemployment benefit taxation works, standard deductions for the 65 plus. We've got it all right there for you.
And with that, that concludes another edition of Community Matters. Thank you once again for tuning in this week. And of course, if you want to hear any of the interviews that you heard today again in their entirety, you can do that right on our website, WPER.org. Have a great day.